welcome back to The Hotspot. I'm Dr. Jillian Hotz, here at the Kids Neuroscience Center, the Miami Project to Cure Paralysis at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. And this morning, we're really excited to have another fantastic guest, Dr. Mickey Witt. Mickey has so many great things that we're going to talk about today about her and our programs here, but she's our bike safe manager here at the Kids Neuroscience Center and a whole bunch more that you're going to hear about today. So without further ado, morning, Mickey. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? Good to be here.
Great. So I thought because you've got a 25-page resume and you've done so much here in the Miami-Dade County community, I thought maybe we'd start off the podcast today for you to tell the audience a little bit about yourself and where you are now and the great things that you're doing here in Miami-Dade County.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me on. A little bit of my background is my doctorate's in neuroscience, so brain behavioral research. A lot of my focus has always been on obesity and trying to combat obesity either via nutrition or being active. And of course, we have two sides of energy balance when it comes to calories in and calories out. So a big part of what I do is nutrition science, and I teach at the University of Miami Gables campus in the kinesiology department. But when it comes to the activity or calories expended side of things, I am here at the Miami Project at the Bike Safe program teaching children and families and everyone about bicycle safety and injury prevention. And so I'm a mom as well. I've got two little kids, so super relevant when it comes to the things that we do as far as our outreach and our educational components. So I'm just happy to be a part of this research team doing really life-saving things and bringing great things to Miami.
So Mickey, I know that you're out and about in the community and people see you riding on the underline. You know, we see the lights are on now. You've got a great phase two that you've been riding on. You know, we can be sort of down on Brickell and there you are again on your bike down at Med Campus or the main campus down in Coral Gables. Then there you are riding on your bike with your helmet on, I should say. So tell us a bit about some of the advocacy work that you've done for the county.
Sure. So I think that it's really important to be visible in the community in Miami-Dade County when it comes to active transportation. I've been a cyclist for too many decades. When I first came to the program back in 2009, I was coming at it through the lens of a triathlete and a road cyclist. And in my tenure here, I learned to become a commuter. And so I learned a lot about all the different ways in which people use micromobility to get around, not just to recreate. And so it's really important to me as I got on my bike today to get here and to take the Metro Rail as a portion of that commute. I think about how important it is to be visible in the community and show Miami-Dade County that it can be done. I almost take pride in the days when I'm lecturing and I'm in a, you know, dress and a blazer and I'm still biking because it can be done. We live in year-round nice weather. There's really no reason aside from maybe hurricane season that we wouldn't want to take advantage of being able to move about. And the reality is the majority of our day is made up of the type of activity that is not necessarily intentional exercise for physical activity. It is an opportunity to stay healthy without having to think that, you know, you're working up a sweat necessarily. So it's important to me to be visible in that regard. It's important to me to advocate for safe spaces for all ages and users and abilities. So you mentioned the underline, and that's one of the, you know, one of the really, I would say, proud events for Miami-Dade County, where it's taken many years for Friends of the Underline to get to the point where now everyone is jumping on board and wants to be a part and understands the vision, which is often sometimes really hard to educate others on when it's not yet a reality. So
yeah, no, I think, you know, we've reached a bit of a tipping point here as far as, you know, bike safety and especially trying to get people out to, you know, walk more. You know, the other thing that I really am amazed about is your involvement since the inception of the Dolphin Cycling Challenge. Mm-hmm. You know, you also take that to, you know, some of these big fundraising events that, you know, you become a major, I guess, you know, permanent stoner or whatever you want to call it. But you've been there annually. Tell us a little bit about your role in the DCC.
My role with the DCC started many years ago when I, you know, helped start the Bike Safe program, and I was reached out to by a friend that worked there and knew what I did and said, we're trying to get some bike safety maybe for kids. Do you want to come talk about bike safety and what we can do at the DCC? So it started out pretty much as a conversation about what could we bring. And I ended up being roped in to be a ride marshal for the first years and continued to do it since that year, where we really just needed, they really just needed somebody with safety, bike safety, institutional knowledge to kind of bring that to the riders who often are doing the event for a loved one, for themselves, maybe if they're a survivor. So they're not coming at it as, you know, even an amateur cyclist. They're coming at it as regular old Joe just pulling a bike off, you know.
Could be on a bike for the first time.
Exactly.
Got it.
So it's a laudable cause, and I can't not go and help with that event every year. It's such an amazing event every year. It gets better and better.
And so, I'm sure Sylvester here at the university is very thankful
that
you're there every year. Everybody's looking for Mickey.
The event has grown, you know, and the Ride Marshal program has grown from 12 of us doing 170 miles over 2 days to 100 plus of us covering 5 different routes every year. So
it's really fantastic. Yeah. So, you know, Mickey, you and I met in 2009. And you came in and we had the Walk Safe program all going all across the county in, I guess, 200 plus elementary schools. And we sat down and we looked at each other and we said, well, you know, it's time to get a bike program going. And we said, okay, well, we got Walk Safe. Let's start Bike Safe.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about Bike Safe and, you know, what our big projects are today. I know you're definitely going to tell us a little about the most exciting things we're doing with our pop-up protected bike lanes. Mm-hmm. But why don't you tell us a little bit about the Bike Safe program?
I would love to tell you about the Bike Safe program. So it's funny thinking about all the times way back when we started this program, because you had set the groundwork. You really gave the template when it comes to how to do injury prevention in children, because Walk Safe was already such a huge success. So I was able to come in and use that as a blueprint for what we wanted to do with Bike Safe, though it's obviously different in terms of how to, the logistics of the mobility piece and the older, a little bit older children. At the time we started with middle school, but right now we are proud to be having gone beyond just the middle school bike safe program in the middle schools to now elementary schools, which I know people have been asking for years. So we are in our second year of that pilot, wrapping that up. The PE coaches in Miami-Dade County Public Schools have been instrumental in making sure that this program gets implemented, life-saving, evidence-based when it comes to bicycle safety knowledge increase in the children. And we've also started and launched, and we're now wrapping up our third year of the bike club program in the middle schools, which is after school program for middle school students. In addition to those two official programs, thanks to our transportation alternative dollars funding those, we have gone.
And I have to say, Dr. Valentina Klusterman.
Absolutely.
Who's our research and evaluation manager, who's put her heart and soul into that program.
Into that bike club program. Absolutely. Yeah. She's under her leadership. We've been able to implement that program across, I think, 30 schools. I'm not sure, but 3 years, and it has been wonderfully successful. We learned a lot, and I think we're in that evaluation phase coming up this summer to see what comes next there. So, absolutely, it's a team effort. This would be impossible without the dedicated team members that we have. Speaking of which, our communications and social marketing manager, Kurt Kaminer, is really, you know, behind where we've gone when it comes to novel approaches in injury prevention. This is something I'm most proud of, that starting with a pop-up protected bike lane event in Wynwood, thanks to various connections in the community, with Wynwood Brewery wanting to put on an event with us, and we had Commander Kerr of the City of Miami in that area. Just all the pieces came together for us to start implementing pieces of what we borrow from tactical urbanism as it goes. You know, we brought paints and we brought cones, and we did what we could to show what a temporary transformation of your community can do for safety. And that's all due to really the vision and the idea that comes about of the landmark Marshall study that looked at over 13 years, 12 major metropolitan cities, showing how impactful and how protective protected bike lanes are really the single most effective way in which we can prevent and decrease fatalities and injuries in vulnerable road users. So it's a direction that I think is novel when it comes to injury prevention, which for so long has been about helmets and high visibility, which of course are super important, but we can't ignore the infrastructure piece. And none of us are engineers, at least not in this room. And in the injury prevention world, it's really hard to kind of think outside of the box sometimes, but we can't ignore the role of environment. And by doing these things, we're getting the community involved in reimagining their space and taking ownership of kind of how we could maybe go about reimagining a space to make it safer.
So, I mean, listen, I got a lot of green paint on my running shoes when I was over in Coconut Grove helping you guys on the one at Coconut Grove Elementary on Matilda Street. And then we just finished up one at Filer Middle School, another great pop-up, a protected bike lane with the group in Hialeah. You know, that was fantastic. So I think little by little with these demonstrations, we can really show a community what's a possibility of, you know, doing this in a temporary sort of situation. As you and I both know, you know, we've got to do a shout out here mm-hmm. to the Florida Department of Transportation mm-hmm. and our Region 6 office here, mm-hmm. who's been a fantastic supporter and funder for a lot of our Walk Safe and Bike Safe projects and programs, as well as the TPO, mm-hmm. the Transportation Planning Organization, with the TAP grants. And, you know, we're grateful for all these partners because, you know, we're good cheerleaders and we get out there and roll up our sleeves and really facilitate. But we need all these partners, as we say, you know, the six E's mm-hmm. To get out there and really like put this all together. So you say, you know, you are a mom, you've got two kids. And they're little ones. How old are they now?
They're 6 and 8.
Right. So, you know, maybe a little something here now for parents that are out there listening today thinking, geez, it would be nice if, you know, we went for a bike ride this mm-hmm. weekend or after school. And, you know, what would be the most important things that you would want to tell a parent or a grandparent or anybody that wants to get out and really bike, but especially if children are involved?
Yeah, if children are involved, of course, you want to always keep in mind, I would say, the primary thing is kids do as you do. They don't do as you say. They do as you do. So it's you know, absolutely paramount that you set, you know, continue to understand that they're going to model after you. And if you want healthy behaviors to be lasting for them, you have to model those healthy behaviors. So, you know, identify maybe key areas protected near you and come up with maybe a routine that you can do, not just maybe a one-off where you're doing it recreationally on the weekend, which is of course great, but get them involved and get them a part of it, get them wanting to get on their bikes. And after that, you know, once you start providing that motivation, then it's a matter of having conversations about, wow, we actually do live within a mile of our school. We actually could bike there if, and it's always the if. And I'll be honest, you know, prior to my work in this field, I don't think I would have thought flexibly about how my community is built. And I think allowing parents and community members and kids to think flexibly about how their community is built, because oftentimes we get surveys, we get information, and the parents are like, you know, always talking about the lack of safety when it comes to getting their kids to school. The reasons why they wouldn't bike to school despite living three blocks away is the lack of safe capacity to get there. So my advice for parents is build the desire for the kids to want to be moving themselves. And it's a step towards independence as well. My kids are only 6 and 8, but I love that they have this love for biking and moving about, because that's a step in the direction of independence, which eventually they'll be, you know. And you want to prepare your kid to be able to be independent thinkers and executive functioning, be able to work on their own and not have to be prompted by adults, you know, eventually. So working in that direction, I think instilling a love for mobility is probably the best, one of the best ways you can do that. And yeah,
I guess, yeah, you know, yeah, that's 100%. You know, you've got to like have them understand that this is fun and this is motivating and, you know, we can do this together as a family mm-hmm. in a safe space. But, you know, just even, you know, finding that right helmet fit mm-hmm. and like the right bike, You know, you go around the community and you see kids on these big bikes and they don't have a helmet on. Mm-hmm. So what about that to parents? Yeah.
Well, we have a ton of really good information on ibikesafe.org as far as resources to talk about proper helmet fit. Of course, your local bike shop, most people, all people there should be super knowledgeable about what's the right bike and what's the right helmet for your child and how to do it properly. And of course, we're out in the community at various events. You can always look on our website or our social media to see where we're next. And we, of course, have certified helmet fitters at all of those events to help assist you. Anything we do in the community, we've got people there that are able to provide additional insight if you want it. A lot of times parents will buy a bike for a kid and say, oh, they'll grow into it. And that's actually the worst thing they could ever do because then the kid is not going to enjoy riding the bike and it's going to be challenging. It's already a challenge to balance on the bike, but now the thoughts and the emotions that are evoked when they think about riding their bike is going to be about the challenge that it is to be on it and holding it up, and then they're not going to want to keep doing it. So definitely look for the right bike and go to the bike. Look, your local bike shop, they're all going to be capable of helping you find the right fit for your child.
Okay, now put your nutrition hat on.
Okay.
Your doctor hat on for this. Water, water, water.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so what do you have to say about hydration, especially here in South Florida? Bike riding.
This is actually, to me, kind of funny of a question because I am the queen of water. If you've ever been dehydrated to the point of almost needing medical attention, you'll never get there again. You'll always be. Then that was me once. It only took once for me to realize, wow, I really didn't drink enough. I have one of those hydro packs, backpacks that I wear even for short runs and short rides because it's so easy to fill it with 1.5 liters and always have it at the ready. Even on a supported ride where I know that there's going to be stops with water and Gatorade, I don't leave that to chance. And you never know. I'm also a ride marshal often, so I'm fixing people's flats and I'm helping out. So I'm out there for what should have been a half an hour till the next water stop. It's going to be maybe an hour and a half. And so I'm glad I have the water with me. So my advice on the water is always have one of those, I think it's 18 ounces, 12, minimally eight ounces, but usually they're 12 to 18 ounces per hour. So if you get to a point where you're feeling thirsty, then you waited too long. You should be, and I say this to the riders that are on the DCC and other events like that, if you've made it to the water stop and your bottle is not empty, you're not drinking enough. Your bottle should be empty by the time you get to a water stop. So it really depends on your effort and the time of day and the weather and whatnot, but it's really hard to overhydrate here. We sweat a lot. And so being on top of that, I even have little salt things that I give to people who look like they're cramping or need it to help kind of balance out the loss of electrolytes. So yeah, stay on top of the water. It's no joke when you are suffering the effects of dehydration.
Thanks for those great safety tips. So we're coming to the end of our podcast today, and I just want to thank you, Dr. Mickey Witt, for talking to us today. And I guess, you know, one more question that I have to ask you is about some of the work we're doing in the elementary schools. You know, we always talk about that's probably the best place to teach life lessons. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the program you're putting together for elementary school bike skills now.
The elementary bike safe curriculum that is currently wrapping up the pilot phase is really wonderful because all of the schools, any school, but all of the schools in Miami-Dade County will soon be able to access this curriculum for free, and they will be able to implement it in the PE classes without a bicycle, without the need for a bicycle. So children can learn bicycle safety principles. Teachers won't have to worry about needing to get a ton of equipment because we built this curriculum so that everyone could access it and everyone can teach about bicycle safety in a fun way, in a way that involves movement like a normal PE class, but one that doesn't necessarily necessitate a bicycle. We have that as an option, but we really wanted to make sure that this curriculum was available to everyone. And so it's really fun. We've been able to observe in various pilot classrooms, PE fields, to see how this looks. And the kids really love it because the activities are fun and they're applying these bicycle safety principles and learning them and understanding them at a level that makes sense for their development. In addition, though, we do these family workshops with the libraries and out into the community community where we're educating and we're having fun safety-related activities for parents and kids to partake and to learn about these things. And again, a fun, approachable way. And we're very excited to be able to reach this population. These kids are so much fun, this age group, because it's the first step into independence for them. And so to do so safely is very important to them. And they take pride in knowing their pedestrian and bicycle safety skills and sharing them and then learning and expanding on it. So yeah, we've got a lot coming in the pipeline for this age group.
So before we sign off, I have to ask you about e-bikes and electric scooting and electric bikes. Where are we going with all of this? What's going on with legislation? Tell us a little bit about what's happening.
Sure. So there's a lot of conversation publicly about electric mobility. And it's something that is obviously it's trending. It's buzzy as far as a topic goes. It's controversial. I've been to various conferences this year where there's data collection when it comes to rideshare. You know, we've got Lyft and we've got Lime and Uber in various metropolitan cities throughout the county, not the county, I'm sorry, throughout the country, that they do different agreements with different cities and communities where they are. And in those agreements, they allow the transportation organizations of those places where they're in to collect and to analyze data and user and ridership. So I think that there is definitely a responsible way in which places can incorporate a really active and thriving micromobility, shared micromobility use program where you've got these kind of like bike shares, but they're ride shares with scooters, where it can make sense. A city like Denver, where I just was this past month for a conference, really understood the assignment when it comes to helping move people around safely and get less cars on the road. I mean, we haven't even touched on this. A whole other podcast episode could be about sustainability and the earth, right? It's so many less cars on the road when you've got people moving about in this manner. And so the city of Denver is a really good example. I think it serves as a nice template. They have all different types of protected bike lanes in their downtown network. And so you see tons of people using their own personal bikes, scooters, and also the rideshare scooters. And so I think that there is a way to do it safely. And I think there's a lot of data out there being collected to show how this can be done. I think that all roads lead to protected bike lanes at the end of the day,
right?
Because it shouldn't be an us versus them mentality. I think that's super outdated when it was that way for bikes versus cars, so to speak, in some places. I think that is silly and it's not progress. If we start talking in a direction of shared space and complete streets and what we mean by that is safe for 8 and 80, then we've got to account for where we can put protected bike lanes and help people get around without needing an automobile.
And I guess, you know, the legislation piece of all of this too is going to have to like set the standard.
Yeah.
And then as soon as maybe that happens, more people will, you know, get out there, be able to do it safely.
Yeah, I'm following any legislation as it relates to e-scooters because, as I said, there's places that get it right, like bicycling and the kind of statutes that exist for that to keep people safe. You know, I'm not going to go ride my bike on I-95. Right. You know, it's against the law one, but it's also not safe. Right. So legislation does have to be paired with the appropriate infrastructure.
Right. Well, a lot of great information today, a lot of different topics we talked about, and I really want to thank you for your time. And of course, all the work that you do here at the Bike Safe program at the University of Miami for the Kids Neuroscience Center. So I'm just saying to all our listeners out there, we're coming to you every month, and next month we'll be having a really special guest, and I'm just going to give a little teaser that it may have something to do with soccer. So stay tuned and stay safe, and thanks for listening to The Hotspot with Dr. Jillian Hotz.